Welcome to Films Apart, the podcast where we poke fun at buried flops, unearth hidden gems, and explore timeless classics.
So grab yourself some popcorn, sit back, and let's break these films apart.
Hello, today's episode is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah.
So we went out, it's been re-released in cinemas.
Yeah.
Me and Lewis
read a little mandate.
It's a lovely little mandate. I went as your wife, free ticket.
Yeah,
with the Eurovision card.
Say that on.
It's fine. Yeah.
And it was good. Full.
It was full. It was the busiest cinema I've seen in a while.
More people were going to see a film made in 2004 than most of the films that are made today.
It was busier than I went and saw the new Captain America the other day, and it was busier than that.
And it's better than that, I hear.
Yes.
Yeah.
But let's not talk about that.
Yeah, let's not go there.
Yeah, really fun film. Glad I saw it on the big screen. I'd seen it once before.
It's one of those films you can definitely watch more than once and you get more from it.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot that you can miss the first time.
Yeah, and we did something a little bit different this time, didn't we?
Yeah, we've changed it up a bit.
Yeah, so we read the script as well.
Yeah, and it's an early draft of the script. I think it's probably one of the first completed sort of drafts. And we just are compare what worked in the script and made it to screen and what didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
It was left on the chopping room floor. So this is one of a film that you enjoy that you suggested we do.
Yeah.
So do you want to do a synopsis?
It's about a couple, Clem and Joel, who meet each other on at a party on a beach when he's in another relationship. They fall in love. They get together, or lust, however you want to look at it. They get together. That relationship is tumultuous. He's very reserved and she's very impulsive. He's introverted, she's extroverted. They're quite different, but they both clearly like each other. But because of their differences, they have difficulties in their relationship, and it doesn't work out. And impulsively, Clementine decides she wants to erase him from his mind. So she goes for this procedure to have this done. When he finds out that she's done that, he decides he wants to have it done because it's too painful. And the film is the journey of his mind being erased whilst he is changing his mind about it. That's where the conflict is. He's trying to stop it from happening.
We follow Joel going through this procedure that basically they map out all the memories of Clementine, and then over a night they slowly erase all of them, whilst he almost relives all of their moments from most recent to the first time that they met.
They met, yeah.
And it toys with time quite a bit, like a film like, what's the one, Memento?
Well, I mean, it goes back mostly, doesn't it? But but it's also, you've got two narratives going on at the same time. You've got him overseeing their relationship in reverse. So you've got a kind of, you see this in the script, you've got a voiceover of him reliving his memory from an external point of view, and then you're seeing the actual memory happen at the same time. It's so clever, and it's so cleverly directed. The cinematography is really good. The just the ways in which they move back, the little tricks.
Yeah,
I mean, you probably know more about that than me.
It's really clever the way it works with sort of the focus of the film, like as he starts to lose memories, the background fades, and there's a bit where they're in a bookshop where they where Clementine worked, and he's reliving this memory of meeting her for one of the first times, and then also the last time that he sort of sees her after she's had him erased. And as that memory dies, all of the book covers disappear. It's like all of the details of the memory slowly disappear until it's just almost like a blank slate.
He gets to a point in this process where he tells the Clementine in his mind that, listen, I don't want this to happen. And so then the two of them are colluding with each other to try and stop it from happening, and they're sort of running away, and they're trying to change the memories. He's trying to put her in a different memory so he doesn't forget her. But it's sort of unavoidable, and you've got that one moment where they're running through the train station, and and all of the bags are disappearing, and,
the people.
And then they disappear, and it's...
Yeah, it's a very bittersweet film, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's heartbreaking in some respects.
Yeah, I think, Joel is desperately trying to hide her away in his subconscious in like memories that she doesn't belong. So you get a few interesting scenes, some a bit odd, where he takes her back to childhood and he's reverted to childhood and she's this babysitter figure. He's crying for his mum. Yeah. Isn't that fun?
Yeah, you don't know. She's like, well, who am I? And he's like, well, you're such and such. And, mm-hmm. and she's like, oh, I really like this dress.
Yeah.
And then there's the bit she says, take me to a really embarrassing memory because this isn't working. Mm-hmm. So then he takes her to a memory where he's masturbating in his bedroom and his mum walks in. And he's like just mortified by this experience and she's laughing at it. It's funny. And there's a subplot that's going on at the same time with the people that are performing the procedure.
Yes.
You've got a doctor and you've got three of his employees, mm-hmm. two assistants and a secretary. And the secretary, you can see from the off, is clearly enamoured by the doctor. She's just in awe of him.
Yeah.
But she's in a relationship with one of the assistants.
Mm-hmm.
And the other assistant falls for Clementine when she's had her procedure, and so we have this really creepy Elijah Wood.
Yeah, he's a really interesting character in this film. So Joel's played by Jim Carrey, Kate Winslet plays Clementine, Elijah Wood plays Patrick
the creep,
steals Clementine's panties and then starts dating her.
Yeah. Much to the disapproval of his co-worker, Stan, played by Mark Ruffalo.
Yes.
Mary, the secretary, is played by Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah.
And Tom Wilkinson plays the doctor. So it's an absolutely brilliant cast.
Yeah. From reading the script, you realise how much, and maybe it's just because we read an early draft of the script, but you can really see how certain actors really brought the characters off the page, like Mark Ruffalo in particular.
Yeah.
His character in the script is quite just to the point. It's almost like throwaway sort of dialogue at points. He's just, it's almost like he's there to keep the story moving on the outside world.
He's an undeveloped character in comparison to some of them, whereas Clementine, who is a developed character in the script, also is very different or somewhat different because of what Kate Winslet brings to it. I think she, you know, Mark Ruffalo does a great performance. Kate Winslet does an amazing performance. I can totally understand why she was nominated for an Oscar. In fact, it made me wonder, do you think that they read the scripts, the people that are nominating these films? Because I mean, it is a great performance anyway. Mm. I mean, I've always thought it's a great performance. I thought it's better than the performances that she won Oscar for.
Yeah.
One of them, certainly. Mm-hmm. But when you read the script, you realise just how good a performance it is because she definitely brings something to it.
Yeah.
And whereas Jim Carrey is really good in it as well, and I often wondered, I often felt like he was maybe overlooked, but I don't feel the same now because his character was there. You can see there was moments that he ad-libbed.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that? They're watching a film at a drive-through.
Yes.
Without the sound.
Yeah.
And the two of them are making up what's
being
said,
aren't they?
Yeah,
they're watching it from over a fence because they don't want to pay for tickets.
Well, in the script, there's like a couple of lines, and they're not that inventive, really.
No.
In the actual film, you know, the line that Joel says is, and now why is this person, people... Is there people coming out of this person's
bum? Yeah, there's people coming out of your butt. Yeah,
and it's you just know that Jim Carrey made that up. You know that he did. Yeah, I mean, I'm almost
certain. The comedy sort
of
leaks out. Yeah,
there's a couple of moments that were in this that weren't in the script that Joel, Jim Carrey's character, said, which I thought that's probably Jim Carrey.
Mm-hmm.
But they were just ad libs from somebody who's very good at improvising. It was he did a very good performance in it, but it's just a different. Level of acting.
Yeah, I think Jim Carrey's character is an introverted. He's quite underplayed. He's not got as much to sort of play with as Kate Winslet sort of got, I assume.
But
all the performances are amazing.
And so what's quite interesting about the... Before we go a little bit more into the plot on the subplot, what's quite interesting about the script is at the very beginning, there is like a whole section set in the future... Where an old woman is going to a publisher's with a manuscript, which, having seen it, I assumed was Clementine, of the with a book about the story of what happened.
Yeah,
you
it's
know,
called Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Yeah. It's this big manuscript, and we're told about how this elderly lady's waiting for an appointment, which you assume is with someone who they have, like, it feels quite personal because it looks like they've been quite often and been turned away. And then she goes through some tubes, which are like used as public transport, like Futurama
transport,
or something. And it really, I thought I was reading the wrong script at first because it's it's set 50 years in the future, and then it brings us back to what we know the film as.
I think it's about 7 pages of it. And I was, and what I was thinking was, I'm so glad they took this out. I'm so glad they didn't include it. Mm-hmm. It's very meta, which I suppose Charlie Kaufman is very meta. And so it's a, you know, play within a play kind of thing. But it obviously doesn't come into the film. And that is also, there's a big section with that at the end, which I'll talk about in a bit. I think the it's interesting, the subplot, isn't it? Because the subplot deals quite well with the concept as well. There's like an unrequited love.
Yeah, there's a few subplots sort of running from outside of Joel's mind, where we have Patrick, the assistant, has...
Well, yeah.
Been and erased Clementine's memory, fell in love with her, and basically using the memories that he has taken from her and Joel's journal to coerce her into falling in love with her, almost manipulating him. He's a very creepy character, which is weird to see Elijah Wood in, because it really works, but he's normally plays quite lovable, sort of innocent guys, I find.
I think he did play a few weirdos, though, in like back in the day.
Yeah. I think whenever I think of him, I obviously think Lord of the Rings and the film as well.
Green Street?
No. The Faculty.
Oh, okay.
So, like, yeah, The Faculty, where he plays like a sort of a teenager whose teachers all have been overrun by aliens, and he's like this sort of final boy figure that's very innocent.
He was in The Ice Storm, which we should probably watch at some point. I think it was a very good film made in the in the 90s that's kind of forgotten. Really. But in that, he plays like a weird kid. So yeah, I think he's definitely got that capacity to play a weird, well, obviously he has, because I mean, he's brilliant in this, isn't he? He's brilliant at it. He's definitely just a freak.
Yeah.
And it's like a double act, really, with Mark Ruffalo's character, who's just very laid back and kind of pretty cool.
Yeah. Bit of a stoner.
Yeah. So you've got that, but you've got the unrequited love between Mary and the Doctor.
Yes.
Which forms quite an important part of the story, really, doesn't it? Because you can see, to begin with, that she's just besotted. But and Mark Ruffalo, who's kind of in, his character's kind of in a relationship with her, is sort of oblivious to it.
You suspect it, but then it's sort of...
Yeah.
He's stopped questioning it now because it's... fizzled just, out, he assumes, or it was just nothing. And we find out later that
she's had her mind erased and she was in a relationship with him.
Yeah, having an affair.
Yeah.
And then in the script, it's revealed that this woman at the start, later on, was actually Mary.
Yeah. Well, before it's that, what's really good about that is that that is the kind of moral of the thing, because she is in all favor of the prestige. She's like, oh yeah, he's wonderful, you know, he takes away these terrible memories, he gives people a new chance at life.
Yeah.
But then the moment that she finds out that actually he erased my memories of our relationship, it's completely flips it, and she's and then she goes round and sends all these letters out, and she gets all the files, and she sends all the files to all the people that have come through the procedure to let them know the truth, which is how Clem and Joel find out at the end. And like you say, at the end of the script, the old woman turns out to be Mary, who's presumably written this book. It's just very weird, the end, you know.
Yeah.
She goes to meet an old man. The old man turns out to be Howard. Mm-hmm. They're kind of, it's like they're bickering like an old married couple.
Yeah.
And then old Clementine comes back into it, and comes for another procedure. And it turns out that the procedure is about Joel. Then it's the 15th procedure that they've had.
So it's just this recurring sort of love,
you know,
hate tragedy.
Which is, you know, an interesting thing to read, but it was definitely a wise choice to leave it out of the film. Yeah.
And I wonder if that's... was Charlie Kaufman's choice as it sort of went on, and he realised maybe this takes you out of the film, takes away from it, will make it feel less timeless with the 50 years time jump and all the futuristic stuff, or if that was a producer's choice.
It would be interesting to know. I think that, I don't know about you, what's your feelings on this with your writing? I often find that beginnings and the endings are the hardest thing, or they change a lot with what you write, you know?
Yeah.
And it seems like, you know, the beginning and the ending in this, you can get rid of it. In the middle of the play, it's pretty much as it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's so similar to it. There's an extra character in it that with Naomi, Joel's girlfriend's in it, and there's quite a few scenes with her that are not in it. And I think his father's in it at some point, and I don't think his father's in the film.
I'm not sure. You also have him in, goes to his office quite a bit. That's not featured in the film. It's just him calling in sick at the start. Yeah.
Little things that actually don't change it much.
Yeah.
Although I say this, and we spoke about this before, I felt, as a writer, you write something and you feel like what you've written is the end piece often.
Yeah, it's essential to everything inside the script.
And then when, everything's tied up neatly as far as you're concerned, and then you go and show it to somebody else and they go, well, hold on a sec, if you did this and you did that, and every little thing is like a kick.
Yeah.
So the amount of changes in that, although in the middle they're minimal, to the actual feel of it, as a writer, I can imagine it. I suppose he's very experienced, and even then he would have been experienced, and he probably was used to having people critique him. But
and I suppose as well, it's probably something where maybe you do overwrite things and add some extra scenes in there so that there's room for it to be sort of
better to overwrite,
chopped up a bit, easier to get rid of.
Yeah. I think Michel Gondry would have had something to say about it. I think the director would have had a look at it, and he would have gone, hold on a sec, Charlie, I think.
Yeah.
I know that this is your thing, but, you know, I think maybe we could just get rid of this whole extra futuristic thing.
Yeah.
Because the film's already complicated enough, really, conceptually. You don't really need to add any other layers to it.
Well, it has that whole thing at the start where you assume it's the first time of Clem and Joel meeting. Him ditching work, going to a beach, bumping into Clementine on the beach, and then them starting a conversation on a train. Yeah. And then it's slowly revealed that that's actually them meeting for the first time after the procedure and slowly falling back in love because he's managed to implant
a seed.
And you also assume that she's implanted Joel as well in her subconscious for her to be at that beach.
Or he knows her that well
that
when she's feeling
like
whatever she's feeling like, she's going to go to Montauk on the beach, and so that seed is planted anyway, and that leads to them meeting, and it's the second time they meet and they fall for each other again, which is the twist, I guess.
And I think, interestingly, in the script, even though I think the whole future jump thing doesn't work really, I think interestingly seeing that they have tried and failed over and over again, I think that is quite an interesting concept, because I think the film does have quite a lot to say about sort of
love,
the last try at love and it being doomed from the start, and like retries at something that just never worked.
Yeah. You said that was so dramatic. The last tries at love.
Yeah. Last try to sort of an already wounded relationship. I don't know.
Do you want to elaborate on that? Is there anything?
Well, they're just not fit for each other. They don't suit each other.
No, I meant more personally.
Oh, more personally. But yeah, I think some of the key differences in the script. I just changed the topic.
I was in a relationship where there was like 50, at least 15 tries where we were just back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, end, get together, end, get together. It's hell.
Yeah.
So it is. He is writing about something that people have experienced.
Yeah, I think so. It's probably something that he's experienced himself to be able to give such depths to both of these characters. Yeah. And I feel like Joel's probably quite a bit like him, because all of the dialogue in the script of Joel's is pretty much as is on screen. Whereas Clementine, she monologues quite a bit more in the script. A lot of that's been cut down and reworded. And maybe that's what Kate's done with the character.
She's more graphic.
Yeah. Yeah. She uses a few slurs in there.
A few slurs, some of them that wouldn't have necessarily been as slurish
Yeah, in the 2000s.
Back then, but they definitely are now. Everything's gay, definitely. Everything's a faggot, you know, yeah. And this and that. And
yeah.
And then the stuff about dried cum and all, you know.
She's just
that's
vulgar.
That's what's in the script. Yeah. It says, yeah. What are you thinking about? And she says, are you thinking about my... He says, I'm thinking about your panties. And she's like, and your dried cum. And I was like... What? I don't remember that in the film.
That bit, well, you would remember that.
And I would definitely remember that because it's very graphic, but that doesn't happen. And
Elijah Wood's character definitely would remember that, the dirty little pervert.
But her pants were clean that he stole.
Yeah,
he said they were clean.
They were clean. Not after we were done with them. Little creep. But yeah, a lot of the main sort of changes in the script were one that
around
I picked up on.
Pants and
panties and cum. One of the ones I picked up on was, interestingly, when Joel finds out that Clem has had him erased from his memory, he's over at some friends.
You assume
they're sort of like a joint friends with the couple. And he's sort of distraught about how he's seen her in the bookshop. She didn't even acknowledge him, pretending not to know him. And she was there with this other guy, young guy, who turns out to be Patrick, who's sort of wormed his way into her life. And you have the couple that are very funny in the film. They have this sort of, they've been together, had their struggles.
Really great performances. Yeah.
And I think David Cross plays the guy. And then Jane Addams, it says. There's Carrie and Rob.
Yeah.
These two have this sort of back and forth of like, don't bring our problems into this. This is about them. Then in the script, they leave the room and Joel flicks through magazines and finds this card that says, please do not contact Clementine regarding Joel. She's had him erased from a memory from the company that does it. And in the script, Joel finds that his own accord, whereas in the film, Rob can't lie to his friend anymore. He reveals it, much to Carrie's like disagreement,
which is much better.
And it works so much better.
Firstly, you didn't need to move the scenes. You've got like Joel sitting on the stairs like a little child who's just distraught. She's coming in and out with the washing. Mm-hmm. He's just on the settee, stoned or drunk.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, I can't do it. Just have this, read it. And then he looks at it and it just feels more authentic.
Yeah. It feels so much more real. It feels more like a familiar friendship dynamic of like, I can't lie to your face anymore.
Yeah. It was a really good decision. Yeah. In fact, all of the things that I saw that had changed in it feel like good decisions.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose that seems maybe logical, but then surely you'd think sometimes that the writer would be like, well, no, I want this.
I think
there probably would have been discussions, wouldn't there?
Definitely. I think three of them actually wrote the script. I saw it.
Well,
was co-written.
He wrote the screenplay.
Another difference that stood out and I think made it a lot better was in the script, so Mary is in her sort of 30s, and the doctor that she's in love with is in his 40s, whereas in the film, there's a much bigger age gap.
Yeah, Mary's in her 20s, and he's in his 50s.
Yeah, and you're not buying... You don't instantly think there's something between them. You just think it's just a young girl who's obsessed with this crush. Yeah. So the reveal of that there's history here is much more effective, I think.
Yeah.
It's really good. And just to show that, like, the procedure doesn't really work because love always sort of finds a way, it worms its way back in. These feelings are so primal that you can't
hide them. The way they reveal that is really good as well. It's all ties in so neatly. Like, the doctor doesn't do the procedure, he just arranges it, but there's something goes wrong with the procedure, which is also which is them trying to change history, trying to change the memories. So he ends up being called, Mary's there already, and then but when he's on the phone in the bed and he gets the phone call, he's like, well, can't you deal with this? And he's like, no. He's like, okay, where are you? And he says the address.
Mm.
And you can see that she's like half awake. So you know that his wife's listening.
Yeah, she's lied in.
And then when they go there, Mary's all over him.
Mm-hmm.
He's aloof and like uninvited. You think that maybe nothing's gone on there.
You feel quite bad for him, don't you?
You do. You feel like this is really uncomfortable, just leave him alone. Yeah. But then gradually you can see that he is slightly going towards her until the point where, you know, he's like, this can't happen, you know, this can't happen as much as I kind of want it to happen. This can't happen. And then the wife turns up and she's outside.
Stands
outside having a fag or a spliff or something. And then she turns up. He stands, sees him, sees the wife, bibs the horn in loyalty to the Doc, and then the wife comes over, punches Stan, which is great. Again, creates this familiarity between characters that is just really nice touch. Mm-hmm. And then she goes off, and then the Doc chases after her,
mm-hmm.
and Mary chases after her, saying, "No, he hasn't done anything. He hasn't done anything." And she goes, "You're a foolish girl. Just tell her. Don't be mean. Just tell her."
Yeah.
And that's how she finds out.
Yeah, that he's
it's really well done.
Before they've had to erase it. And you mentioned in the script as well. There's an interesting thing about that because I didn't get to this point in the script.
What did I mention
about their relationship and how there's actually bigger stakes
The abortion. Yeah. But firstly, it was different in the script the way it went down with the wife coming over. This is just a small detail, but that thing where Stan bibs the horn and she comes over and punches him doesn't happen.
Yeah.
In the script, she comes, they both see it, and then she goes.
Yeah.
And it's like it's little things like that make such a difference, don't they?
Yeah, it's so interesting, especially because of Stan's obviously with Mary. He's himself witnessed his girlfriend cheating on him with his senior.
Yeah.
And then he's still
loyal
to his boss and to Mary to pat the horn to warn him, like, guys,
great pathos.
Being caught out. Yeah. It's interesting.
It's really good.
This sort of split dynamic of characters' feelings and their actions. And
real texture of characters' emotions and feelings. It's really good. But in the actual script, it turns out that what has been erased is not just this relationship, but that she'd had an abortion and she had this baby. And then it goes to it has these extra scenes where all the files are being sent out and you get montages of like the people receiving the letters some people have been raped, some people have been at war, you know, all of this stuff that's not in the film, and it's a really good thing personally I think that it's not in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary having this abortion and this scene between her and Stan, all of this stuff doesn't happen in the film. Like, it's massive chunks of the end that aren't in it, and it's so much better for it. And I'll tell you why I think that is, because it's a really good concept, the idea of wanting to raise memories of a painful love tryst.
Yeah.
And it feels like they know it's a really good concept.
Mm-hmm.
Because it just is. If you hear that, you hear that story, if you're given that pitch straight away, you think, that's brilliant. That's a really good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, they've kind of overboiled it in the script. You know, all of this extra stuff's written because they know it's a really good idea.
Yeah.
But what makes it a really successful idea is the fact that it's underplayed.
Yeah, they keep it simple.
They keep it really simple.
Complex idea.
It's just a little thing that's going on, and it doesn't add any other dimensions to it. And with all those dimensions they remove from it, it's kept it a really pure film.
Yeah, it feels too sci-fi with the jumping back and forth that with the film, it's just
too many.
It's so much better for it just being this almost, rather than this sort of science fiction sort of rom-com drama, it's more like it's just
that affects the whole of society with all these soldiers and everyone
it's
and people being raped.
It's
just very personal. It's about a few people.
And we spoke about this earlier, actually, about how it'd be interesting because Charlie Kaufman's never done a sequel to anything. It'd be interesting to see. You mentioned a TV series. I said maybe another film, like something in this universe of just how these procedures might have affected other people, because there's in the film there's like people in the waiting room of a woman who's lost her dog. There's clearly another character who looks like they've lost a child. They've got like sports trophies in their bag, and I just think there's so much room here to see the sort of tragedy of loss and what it takes for someone to want that pain erased from them, and how it's in the end sort of futile. And I think that's what that scene at the end does, I guess, in the script. We've shown you glimpses of these lives. And clearly it doesn't really need it, because I don't think it works in that scene.
It doesn't, because, you know, you mentioned it, that when you see the woman with the dog, it's so effective.
It's literally a shot it's for like 5 seconds.
It's hardly
and
it, anything
I think
in
I audibly went like, oh, in the cinema, and you laughed at me for it.
Probably, yeah.
But, yeah, it was like the guy with his trophies where his son's dead. That didn't bother me, but as soon as I saw a dead dog, I was like, oh, not a dog.
But, yeah, no, I know what you mean. I personally can't. I think it is good as it is.
Yeah.
But I could see it as TV in the sense that it's like a good frame to be able to tell the stories of lots of people's lives. So each episode you could have a different person's life, and then they have this procedure. And maybe there would be like an arc that's involved with the dismantling of that procedure over time. But like for the actual...
Yeah.
It, you know, almost like What's that? Poker Face. Did you watch that Poker Face?
No, I wanted to. The Rian Johnson.
Where it's TV series. What's her name? Natasha Lyonne. But anyway, she they made that in the style of like old school kind of Columbo-y kind of thing, yeah. Where each episode's contained, but there's also like an arc of what's going on, and that's her journey of escape in it. So I could see it in that sense, in an old school kind of TV way, but. But personally, I feel like it is
it's
good as it is.
Yeah, it's definitely. It's a good film. Really fun.
Yeah.
If I can imagine, the budget wasn't very high. Let's see if there's anything about it here.
I mean, it feels like it would be a decent-sized budget. I mean, firstly, Jim Carrey was in it at the peak of his...
Budget of $20 million, which isn't that much for a film.
It's not. And even then, it wasn't that much for a film, I don't think. I wonder how much of that was paid to the, to the cast.
I mean, Jim Carrey got... $15 million. Kate Winslet got four, and the rest went on the film.
maybe they got percentages or something.
Yeah,
I
think as well. Other than obviously Jim Carrey and Kate Winslet off the back of Titanic, I think the rest of the cast was still very early days with their
careers. Kirsten Dunst, Spider-Man. Yeah. So she was obviously trying to do a bit art. Elijah Wood was very well. He'd already done Thingy, hadn't he?
Had he already done Lord of the Rings?
The Rings was like 2001, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was actually. So 2001 to 2003. Oh, okay.
So you got massive film stars in it, but they're obviously they've all gone right. We want to make a film with Charlie Kaufman and Michelle Gondry. You know, they've gone. We want to do an art house kind of film, and so they've taken a cut. And Tom Wilkinson is a very well respected actor as well. And Mark Ruffalo was on his way up, I guess.
Yeah.
One of my all time favourite films, definitely.
Yeah.
And something that I aspire to as a writer.
Yeah. It's such an interesting way where you can have these stories that are so personal to a character and there's so much growth where you don't need to keep it necessarily grounded. There can be like a wild or spectacular idea behind it and you still got room to explore characters and really have them have depth.
So it's a good one. It's one that if you haven't seen it, definitely go and see it.
Yeah, now it's spoiled for you.
Now we've ruined it. But to be honest with you, it is, like I said, it's one of those films you can watch more than once. And so it's like I always think when you go to see Shakespeare, I never used to do this. I always used to go and see Shakespeare and not read anything about it before.
In person?
Personally. Yeah, I used to go and have a cup of tea with him.
Thought he was dead, but
No, I used to go and watch Shakespeare plays. And Mr. fucking pedantic, and I used to make a point of not reading anything about it. It's almost like as if I had to test myself to understand it.
Yeah.
And what I found was that sometimes I come out of it going, I haven't got a clue what the hell just went on. Like I remember going to see Richard II with Kevin Spacey. I don't know if you know.
What you watched it with him, or he was in it?
He was sitting next to me with his hat
and down your pants.
I didn't say that. Kevin, I didn't say that.
No.
But he was obviously in it. It was when he was at the Old Vic.
That's
and
cool.
And it was well, I came out in the interval and I was like, I haven't got a clue what's going on.
No.
But actually I was surrounded by other people and they were going, you're not on your own.
No.
but ever since then I thought, this is ridiculous. So now whenever I go to see something that's like Shakespeare or that's a bit more complex, I just read the storyline beforehand. Yeah. It's like if you were gonna go and see an opera or something, I'll just not that I do that very often, but you know, like read the storyline first.
Yeah.
And this, anyway, this the point is you can watch this film more than once, so it won't hurt hearing what we've said today. Popcorn scores?
Yeah, still popcorn score. Do you want to go first?
I'll give it. Yeah, I'll give it five.
Yeah, yeah. That seems so. Five salty score out of five.
Yeah.
It's hard. I'm not
it's
sure.
Always hard
it's
for you.
Four or five. It is always. They can't see under the table. Don't tell them that.
Is that what's digging in my knee?
I wish. I've got to give it a five, really, because I don't know what would make it a four out of a
10 out of 10.
Five.
Then?
So, yeah, 10 out of 10. 10 five sweet, 5
ten
salty.
No,
10 sweet and salty.
yeah, that's the one.
Brilliant film.
Brilliant film.
And I feel like it's quite timeless as well,
which
it probably wouldn't have been if some of the things stayed in from the earlier versions of the script.
Yeah.
Let us know, and please actually do, we're begging you at this point.
Yeah.
Let us know if you agree for one, what your scores for it would be. You can rate it out of 5 out of 10, whichever you want.
If you want us to stop talking smut, you know, let us know anything.
Yeah, just anything.
You know? Or if you want us talking more.
Yeah, you know. If you liked us delving into the script a bit, because I think it's something we've got to try and do more.
Actually, I think that's our plan. Our plan is now, for our own learning as much as anything, is that we're gonna read a script and watch a film.
Yeah.
And then podcast it.
Yeah.
So from now on, you'll be getting a bit of script analysis as well.
Yeah, a bit of script analysis. But yeah, so this is only our first time trying it, so I think we'll probably work it in. We'll get used to it more and work it in more. Maybe even we can have like excerpts of a script and bits.
Yeah, maybe we'll even have you acting. If there's like a little monologue, you can read a monologue and...
sorted.
And I'll do the directions, like the stage directions.
But yeah, thanks for watching, guys.
Yeah.
And girls. We'll see you in the next one. Bye.